Unibet. Episode 93. Mitch O'Keefe, Head Coach. TIVAK Innsbruck, die Haie.
I love this job and I love the challenges it brings. And I love the game and I love watching it and scouting and the players and seeing who I get to work with next, because the players we bring in always do have success and they move on to big contracts somewhere else, and I'm happy for them. That means I did my job. I helped my player grow and move on to something bigger, and I take pride in that.
Und Phil Lukas, Head Coach, Steinbach Black Wings, Linz.
Ich habe ja das Vergnügen gehabt, jahrelang zu kommentieren oder einige Jahre lang zu kommentieren, und habe dort mehr oder weniger das, was mir wichtig ist am Spiel Eishockey, hab ich die Möglichkeit gehabt, das zu vermitteln, und nichts anderes tue ich jetzt.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder! Abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht?
Unibet Hockey. O'Clock. He and his team have been one of the most pleasant surprises of the current Ice Hockey League season. It's been overdue to finally get him on Unibet Hockey O'Clock, and so happy that he's now on the Unibet Hockey O'Clock line. It's none other than Head Coach of the Innsbrucker Haie, it's Mitch O'Keefe. And Coach O'Keefe, so thankful that you're taking the time that you're now on the show.
No, it's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
Coach, we've been there before. Innsbruck was one of the very pleasant surprises last year in the Ice Hockey League until COVID really derailed the entire season. Now you're back in the standings. If the season ended today, you'd be top six bound, and you wouldn't even have to go through the pre-playoffs. How proud are you of basically the things that you achieved last year up until the November break, and of the things that you achieved this year already?
No, I'm definitely happy with the way we've been trending as a club the past couple of years. I think guys are really buying in more, taking on the roles and with pride. And I think it's the hardest part is trying to keep that momentum with a short roster without an Alps League team. When we run into injuries and COVID problems, it really hurts us as a group and as a club. We aren't one of the richest clubs in the league, so we don't really get the chance to have that depth. But it's nice. A lot of guys have been getting a lot of ice time and really developing the last few years with their Austrians and local Tyrolean players. I've really taken strides and directions of really putting the work in and getting that ice time and playing big minutes. So it's all kind of all worked hand in hand. And some of the problems that we have as a club without the depth and the money, but there's also positives in that as well, which has really helped our guys develop.
When you talk about the fact that the guys have been buying in, and I know like developing a hockey team is a process, and there are multiple processes running at the very same time. But when talking about guys buying in, how do you sense them buying in even more? Is there something you can nail it down to, put it down to?
I think it's just watching the body language and the character and seeing how they ask questions. If I put, say, Thomas Matta on the PK, and how he's always interested in how he can do better, and he really takes pride in blocking shots and how he can be better on that faceoff in the D-zone on the PK. And you just see how guys are really trying to develop themselves and put in the work. And when you give them that opportunity, you can just tell they really want it and they want to help every way they can. And you can see they do it with pride. And it's good as a coach. It's fun to coach guys like that. And also this year, a big surprise for me with some chemistry on his line is Winkler for an Austrian. He's really bought into playing a more physical game and finishing his routes and getting in on the forecheck. And he sees how that is really helping his game. You can see how his points are a lot higher right now by just doing the little fundamentals a little bit more. And once they start grasping that a little bit more, you could see them start trending upwards, which has been great.
We record this conversation the day after a game, the day before a game. The schedule really, really picks up. The action gets a little more intense with now more games on the horizon in shorter rest periods, quote unquote. How does this day in between games look like? What's lead us through your day as a coach after a game and right before a game?
Well, after this weekend, when we have two tough games, so we play again on Tuesday, and last night in overtime against a hard-fought physical game against Bolzano, I decided to give the guys a day of rest because we have to travel all the way to Clagy tomorrow. So our guys played a lot of minutes yesterday, and we need those guys rested and ready for another one. And we watched some video on things this morning over a coffee, and talked to my assistant today on the phone about how we can get better in certain areas and what we're planning on doing to try and get the video ready for the pre-scout and the quick review. It just happens pretty fast with the games back to back and one day in between. So you just got to prepare, take the good from the last game. Don't focus too much on the negative, because you got to flip it right away and be ready and confident for the next day.
Now, one might be enticed to say that the game against Bolzano, played yesterday on Sunday, we record this conversation as stated on a Monday, was in typical or played in typical Innsbruck fashion. You scored a lot of goals. You conceded maybe more goals than you'd have liked to see. What are the takeaways from yesterday's game, and what are, with a short turnaround, things that you could try to immediately change?
I think our unforced turnovers, once we try to get over the blue line, always causing our odd man rushes. I've been preaching it for a while now, and it's been kind of a backbreaker the past five games for us. And you can show it and show it, but if they're not going to fix it themselves, it's hard to implement skating in practice when they do it in practice or something like that, which we did once, and it was great. Everyone was dumping it every chance they could just to stop from getting a skate in. But they just got to keep showing them and implementing and telling and showing them on video. We can't throw a blind through the middle or drop passes to nobody, and it's in the back of our net. So I think we have to continue to show them those things. And when we do get pucks behind the D with the speed of our forecheck, we get more zone time, and we're playing in their end a little longer and then playing defense. And I think once we can get that dialed in, it'll help us a ton.
Now, I've also brought you on the podcast, not only to talk about the here and now, but talk about the game of hockey and your time in Innsbruck in broader terms. A lot of listener questions actually have reached me. So there's high interest in everything that goes on with the Innsbruck team. One of the questions, a fairly general one, that one, when just looking at the game of hockey and the games that are being played, sometimes just doesn't get asked, but is of interest, is just how you've been spending your time in Innsbruck and how much you like it there. It seems so general, but there's more to the question, obviously.
Yeah, there's two parts to it. I really enjoy the club and the people I work with. It's a fun environment, and there's a lot of trust there, which really helped me develop as a coach and as an individual as well. But away from the rink, it's an amazing city, especially in the wintertime and for families. You go skating, skiing, tobogganing, just going for a walk, and it's a beautiful town. So no, it's a very, very happy place to be for my family and I at the moment.
How advantageous is it to be in a quote-unquote smaller market with a small market team where the media scrutiny might not be as intense as in other markets, especially when you're trying to develop as a head coach, as you just stated?
I think it's definitely easier than being picked apart after every game in some areas, for sure, getting all your every move questioned and scrutinized, like you said. But in Innsbruck, I feel like our expectations are getting higher as a club year by year, and the culture trying to become more of a winning mentality. We do put a lot of pressure on ourselves, But again, there's a lot of trust from our president and our sports manager and Max Steinacher to really, if I make a mistake, I understand, considering I am a little bit new at this, but I feel myself, my confidence has grown a lot in the past 2 years and the years before. And I feel like it's coming all together, and it's been a good spot for me for sure.
It's an interesting aspect, development as an organization, development as a coach. What would you say is the biggest difference between first year Innsbruck head coach Mitch O'Keefe and now third year Innsbruck head coach Mitch O'Keefe?
Definitely the confidence, not second guessing myself. I believe in the process and the system we're trying to implement. I had questions in myself and doubts in myself, just like any human would when they get promoted in a position. But I'm very happy with where I'm at right now and the work I put in. And I think my players see it too, that I've had over the years. They've seen myself grow as a coach as well. So it's been coming full circle, and it's been a good process, to be honest, and I enjoy it.
Now, if you could really take us... take me with you on the inside of those kind of aspects. If you're having second guesses, when did they come up? At what particular moments did you second guess yourself? If you'd like to share with the listeners and me.
Tough to say. I try and forget those bad things. I try and get always back in a positive way. But no, I just think maybe like, oh, I should try this. And maybe this isn't going to work. But after now getting to try these things here in different systems and different type of putting different lines together in combinations with maybe not loading up two imports like I did in the first year with two lines and then spreading it out more the last year. And you could see how we had more of an impact of a punch rolling out our lines. And then this year as well, I feel like it works more. And depending on who you're playing and looking at their lineup, and it's just to get used to it more and more.
The other day I recorded a long conversation with a now retired player, former player who played a lot of league games. And he said head coaching to him is maybe 70 to 80% people management. And just the rest of it is coaching. How do you approach the business of head coaching? Is that the case, that it's a huge chunk of, or that people management is a huge chunk of what you're doing?
Absolutely. You have a lot of guys who put a lot of stress on themselves to perform at a high level. And you've been there and you understand where they're coming from, and you understand the stress you put on yourself and the pressure you put on yourself. And you know, I always want to talk to my guys and see where they are, and always have one-on-one meetings, and I always have my door open. And I think it's all about talking with the guys and communicating with them and having expectations. And not, some guys are so hard on themselves, and just looking at film with them and like, no, that wasn't as bad as you think. Like, you're doing this right, you're doing that right, but this is some areas where, yeah, you could get better. Don't think you got to blow it all up. I said, just sometimes guys need a lot of reassurance, and they're all young athletes. They're all 20 to 26 to 30. They're not grown men mentally with confidence, all of them. Some of them, they just need some of that sometimes. And I feel that is a huge part of it, is just managing people and expectations.
But with only 30 years of age, and I hope it's okay to give away your age, your official here on the podcast. Do you feel still kind of connected to those 25 to 30 year olds, or is there kind of an age gap that you're slowly but steadily feeling out?
Well, I feel my body wise, yeah, I'm feeling older for sure. Getting aches and pains a lot easier. It just comes with old age. But no, I think at 38 and guys at 25, it's not much of a gap, but there is a gap there. I think I just have a lot of respect for the guys and what they're going through with this grind, and I know what it feels like. And that I think that they understand too, that I do care, and I do understand the things they go through, not just at the rink, but at home as well, and other things. And the older you get, you realize there's a lot more than hockey is life, and life can be very troubling. And some people you don't know about, some fans might not know about what's going on behind closed doors, and they're just worried about their performance. Like, their performance is this performance is that, but they don't understand the things that are going on in their personal lives that might really impact that. So it's important to have those conversations with the guys.
I vividly remember Dylan Stanley, who is now an assistant coach with the Pioneers in Fallbrook, coming onto the podcast, and I asked him for kind of a piece of advice when dealing with considerably younger people in the locker room. And the one piece of advice that he shared is take away the remote control when it comes to their choice of music. What's your advice when dealing with young or younger people in the locker room?
I think they got to be who they are. They got to have to just having fun. It's this experience for them too. I remember if I was 20 years old, stepping into a locker room with 30-year-olds, nervous as hell. I mean, I can remember guys telling me when Todd Ellick was on the team and they're 20 years old, they'd be shaking in their skates and warm-ups, being in line with them and stuff. So, you know, it's nice these kids can be with these older guys and ask questions and things, but it's important they get to be themselves. That's for sure.
A lot of the questions that I received dealt with roster construction and the team that we're currently enjoying seeing on the ice. The product that Innsbruck is feeling in terms of offensive output is a great one. So a lot of things obviously coming together on the ice. How does that process work when you and management sit down during summertime and probably early spring in trying to come up with a roster for Innsbruck?
Well, it starts with the budget expectations, and what they give us to use. I'm not going to say the numbers, but it's a lot smaller than most clubs. So it's a 365 job day a year. Like, you have to look year round to see where guys are playing. You know the leagues. I played in the league, so you know what type of players could be successful at this level, given the opportunity. But it's a lot about pre-scouting. It's a lot about times on the phone with Max. He always brings me a lot of player lists too, and we discuss, and I have some very close connections with an agent that I trust very well, and a few other ones I really trust that I like to work with. It's just, it never really ends, as you always are looking for those guys, and it has to be a good fit. They have to be looking not just to come here. I like to recruit younger, more motivated players. I don't really take guys over 30. I try and have guys use this as a stepping stone so they're really motivated and to help with the culture of the club. And it helps us to recruit the next year as well, to see these guys come in, have great years, and also care about the team as well. And you have to do a lot of background checks. You might get offered a guy who has 150 points in one league, but he's not a good person. You don't want him in your locker room. So we try and really do our background checks to find the right people and the right fit.
What is the biggest red flag when you do such a background check? Is it indeed character, or are there other things that raise your attention in a negative way?
Just if they're coachable, you know, if they take criticism well, if their teammates get along with them, do they fit well in the locker room? Are they selfish? These types of things you don't want, and that can take away from everybody else's performance and their enjoyment of coming to work every day. So you try and keep it as a fun and uplifting atmosphere as possible, but a hardworking one as well.
Now, I've been dealing with the league for more than a decade now, and it's always interesting to see which teams bring in which kind of imports. And for some teams, it's a hit and miss business. Sometimes, or one year, their imports are great. Another year, their imports aren't what they expected them to be. And then there are teams, and we're kind of always are marveling at what Bolzano is doing, who seemingly more often than not hit on their imports. And as much as we marvel and look at what Bolzano's done, one has to look, especially in recent years, at what Innsbruck has been doing. Why? And it's a little more subjective, I guess, but why is it that Innsbruck tends to have better imports or perform better in the league than other teams? Is it just a feeling, or is it something that you're sensing as well?
Well, I know I can't miss on an import because I won't have the chance to change them. It's just the budget that we work within. If we have an import come in, I think we've maybe brought one in the past 3 years during the season. So the guys we bring in know that it's an opportunity for them to be the guy and take on that role and take on that leadership. And they seem to run with it and they do a really good job with it. And like, for example, Christopher Campini, very successful in my first year here. Last year with McGully, Hunter Brinker, solid year as Messner as well. This year, Shaw really exploding, giving him a new role and a new look out of Fehervar. Helly too. Levens is back again, doing a hell of a job for us. So we've been lucky to get good people, not just good players. And I think that's the most important thing, and it makes it easier to work with. But no, I can't really put a staple on it to say why it happens every year so far, because sometimes you just get lucky too. You can't just say, I know this, I know that. It's not the case. It's not the truth. So it is, it's been good so far. It's all.
Truth be told, the last question kind of was a setup question, just because when you look at some of the new additions like Tyler Coulter, who came in from Norway, first year in the league, already point per game scorer. When you look at, you labeled him Helly, it's Adam Holuka, and one day I'll hopefully ask him about the correct pronunciation of his last name, hoping that this just was the right pronunciation, comes in, is a point per game scorer as well. You bring in a new defenseman, Anders Krogsgaard. He's a point per game scorer as well as a defenseman. Three instant hits immediately for Innsbruck, and just not exclusively talking about those three players, but how did the process work in there and in other regards, just scouting them, getting a feel for them and eventually pulling the trigger, saying these guys are fitting what we're doing?
Well, it is a process. It's a lot of scouting throughout the year. Max, our sports manager, he always brings me some names. He helped me find a few of those guys and helped me get those guys signed too. And he's a big part of that as well. I can't take all the credit, that's for sure. And it also is helpful with the connections that we both have in the agencies that have these players. But it's, I think it's, some of those leagues like Norway have been good to us as a club. Campini, Crystal from there as well. I like that league, the way it's a fast league. And you also see the guy in Linz right now who's leading the league is from there, I believe, as well. I find those guys transfer well into our league with offensively with the speed that they can bring. There goes my secret, I guess. No, but I'm just kidding. You have to know those leagues well. And like Watson, I feel like finding him out of the UK league, you have to look for a team like us without not a huge budget, could just grab AHL guys or NHL, Swedish top league players. We need to go and find players in the other leagues where we can afford them and give them the opportunity to shine.
You already alluded to it being a 365-day kind of business. And just the sheer fact of having to leave no stone unturned, how tiring is that process in April, in May, in June? Is there ever a point where you say, I need to get away from this?
Oh, there's always times you want to get away from it and go put your feet up. But no, I love this job and I love the challenges it brings. And I love the game and I love watching it and scouting and the players and seeing who I get to work with next, because the players we bring in always do have success and they move on to big contracts somewhere else. And I'm happy for them. That means I did my job. I helped my player grow and move on to something bigger. And I take pride in that. And I think it's been good so far. And yeah.
But getting back to kind of the roster construction, I mean, of course, you know, or you hope you know which kind of Austrian players or which Austrian players will remain on the team, so you get a good feel for what's already in place. How are you trying to allocate kind of roster resources for the lack of a better term? How does the list of priorities look like when heading into an offseason? Is it always the same, like first line cinnamon, right-handed shot who can play power play, a right-handed shot defenseman who can play on the points. How does the list of priorities look like heading into an offseason?
Well, first we see who we're losing or who we're able to keep. Even with the Austrians, I like to try and get the Austrians signed first. But I have a good eye for what I want right away. So we usually make our team signings are done early because we try and get them right away. We know who we want. We know exactly what we're looking for. Like you said, if we're losing a guy like Messner, we had to go find a right-handed defenseman. And that was our last signing this year with Krogskav. And we were lucky he popped up in such a shallow market that late. And it was a good fit, and he's going to have his baby, I think, soon in the next couple of weeks. So we're excited for him, and I think he enjoys it here so far too, and it's been good for his family. But I know, like, when you need to get the Austrians done first, I think it's important because they are a huge part of the team, a massive part, and you can't have success without them. And in our club, it's 40% Tyrolean on our roster every year. So we have to do more. I believe we should put a little bit more in developing in the juniors here just so we can continue that growth from within. And I think that's step by step. We're getting there too, year by year. And we have a great group there as well, working hard. So, but again, we try and keep as many Austrians as we can from Tyrol because obviously they play with pride from here. And you can see it, and they like being here. It's a great city. But again, if they do well and they move on, say like Lindy, when I was here my first year and seeing how much success he's had, it's good to see as well. You're happy to see it. But it's also hard to compete when you're losing your best Austrians as well.
A couple of interesting things you touched on with your last answer. A couple of things I want to elaborate a little later during our talk. Just one thing that you mentioned that I want to follow up on is the shallow market, certain positions, shallow market for imports. How has the market been developing the last couple of years? We had the pandemic, not a lot of North Americans coming over. Now there are sometimes too many. I mean, obviously, extremely expensive imports with the North Americans not playing in the Continental Hockey League. How's the market been going these past few years?
It's been banana lands, to be honest. It's been wild. I feel bad for a lot of hockey athletes back home because the pandemic made a lot of guys retire because a lot of leagues just didn't play for a year. And that alone, we lose hundreds of players looking for jobs. So it's been a big challenge, I think, for a lot of clubs. And also now with what's going on in Russia, those guys that would play in over there, they're looking for work and they're coming for less money in different leagues. And there is a trickle-down effect to our level. So it's been tough waters to navigate at times, absolutely. That's why I feel we did a good job at looking at what we needed early and going after it right away.
I want to get to the Austrians on the team, and I want to get to one specific Austrian you named, or you said that development is one of the key things for the organization. As of right now, you're also developing coaching talent. Your assistant, Florian Pedevilla, has been with you on the staff basically since after his retirement. How has that relationship evolved? I've asked you yourself about your development as a head coach. How has that relationship developed over the years?
Honestly, it's been great. I think he's done a terrific job. It's all about trust. I let him run certain things in the team and I give him full bore with it. I stay back. I let him do his thing. So I also let him develop in his way and figure out his way of coaching and his style and his beliefs. And I think it's been a really good relationship. We've always laugh every day at the rink. We see things differently in different ways. So we bounce ideas off each other all the time. And we're around the same age, so we have the same issues. We both have kids the same age, and it's we can always talk to each other, not just about hockey, which makes it even more enjoyable. No, I think it's been outstanding working with Flo. It really has.
Does nationality matter? To paraphrase it, is it an advantage to have an Austrian assistant head coach, or could it be Australian or South African or Brazilian?
I think having Flo here, from being here for so long and playing for this organization for so long and being so respected in the town for giving so much to this club that he's had already. It's helped me even more than I think I could ask for any import assistant coach, knowing the junior coaches, knowing the people in the town, even helping out with sponsorship, helping the club in every way he can. I couldn't ask for anybody better, to be honest.
When we get to the nitty gritty in terms of the roster and when we go down the roster spots, as stated before, there's huge interest in some of the guys that are in Innsbruck's pipeline in terms of development. And one of the questions from listeners that reached me regards Markus Grazer, 18-year-old goaltender out of Innsbruck. And the question was, how's his development going? And at what point can fans expect maybe a game or two for him in the between the pipes for Innsbruck?
That's one of my proudest athletes in the club. I first came here as a goalie coach, and I worked with him since he was 15, 14. And we've put in a ton of work. And we spent once a week, every Tuesday night, my first 2 years, an hour with him every night doing goalie things and extra things with him and seeing how he's developed and how hard he works. He is the future of this team for sure at some point. You can't really just say when, to be honest. Everything has to fall into place. But no, he is definitely one of the future Austrians for this club. Absolutely.
There can, as we all know, never be too many good goaltenders, obviously, especially when it comes to goaltenders with an Austrian passport. Someone who doesn't have an Austrian passport but is in the Innsbruck system, and that question came from a obviously well-informed person because his name didn't ring a bell. He asks about the development of Kazimieras Jukner, a 19-year-old in the Innsbruck system as well, who I think has played for the U20 team this season so far. How were you able to find him? What about him? And where is he in the unofficial depth chart of Innsbruck goaltending?
Well, to be honest, we're focusing on, like I said before, our roster is 40% Tyrolean, so we're focusing more on developing the local kids. The imports are not really our concern right now. To be honest, we were developing the local guys, and we need Tyroleans in our roster. So I believe I've worked with him as well. He's a good kid, but I don't see him being with the club anytime right now.
Question, hopefully answered satisfyingly for that person. A lot of things that reached me regarding your system and questions to it. I mean, obviously, when you score that many goals, something must go right. At the same time, if you concede a little too many, some things might go wrong. If you had to outline, just to set this up, your idea of hockey and your system, what would that be?
Well, that's a pretty broad question, but I like the way we play offense for sure. I like how we play with speed and we get in on the forecheck. I think that's given us a lot of success. But I do want to be harder around our net. I want us to be quicker at yellow pucks, I call them, and 50-50 pucks in the D zone. I want to close quicker and snuff teams out a little faster. And in our exits, I want to be a lot cleaner. I'm obviously never satisfied when you're letting in that many goals. You're always trying to find a way to fix it. And once you try and fix one thing, something else starts. So that's part of the challenge of being a coach. But though I think the brand of hockey we play is exciting and it's fun to play and it's fun to watch. And no, I wouldn't really change too much other than obviously less goals allowed and a little more wins.
And obviously the numbers just back up what you said. That's also, according to the Unibet stats, 4 goals per game. That's the best offense in the league, 3.77 goals against. That's the second worst metric or defense in the league. When it comes to fixing a defense, I don't know, it's an extremely broad term. What kind of things you try to focus on? What kind of things you try to work on in getting the defense right?
Well, you look at the analytics. I like to look at them after every 3 games. Where are our goals against coming from? And also where goals are coming from. And I think it was the past, the three games before, we looked at the analytics of the goals against, and it was off turnovers between the neutral zone was 50%. And I was like, oh, well, we got to fix that immediately. Since then, we've fixed that. Now it's the PK has been struggling a little bit, and now we got to put a plug in that hole. So we're trying to fix every little thing as we can. And it's tough right now when you're not getting the practice time with all these games. You're trying to do it on the fly, and I know the players get frustrated because they want to put it the time in on the ice and put that together too. But the nice thing about it is when you have your teammates or your guys wanting to get better just as much as you do, you're doing something right. That's for sure.
When we look at the Innsbruck goaltenders, at the very least, the two that have been on the score sheet the years that you've been coaching, it's always been Tom McCollum. It's always been René Svete. And just knowing that as an Innsbruck goaltender, you're probably facing more shots than, let's say, a Klagenfurt goaltender. How does the mental component play into that? How do you prepare the guys for a game? How do you make them embrace facing more shots and maybe having to grab a puck or two more out of the net after or during a game?
It's a tough question, I guess, but I think knowing those guys and knowing how they work together and knowing them more as individuals, every year I get to work with them. I expect more out of them every year. And I saw Tom last year take a good step. He started the season really well this year. But it's you can't always blame teammates for mistakes. You can't always just blame your goalie for mistakes. It's always a combined effort. And I think it can be better on both ends of that. And I think right now they're both going through a bit of their own struggles as well, and we're trying to get them out of that and putting in some extra work. When we get some ice time again, we'll do that, some more video for sure. But it's all about confidence, goaltending. All about confidence. If you're feeling good, you're seeing the puck better, you're feeling bigger, you're moving quicker, reading the play. And when you don't have that, it can be tough sledding for sure. And I think right now, confidence, it's huge, and we need to get that back for those guys as well. We don't need them second guessing themselves. I think they should feel confident and comfortable here since I've been here. I think they should see how it works. But no, I think the next step is getting them back to where they need to be as well.
If we look around the league, it's interesting that 4 out of the 13 head coaching positions have been filled with former goaltenders. And if we expand on that, the team that's currently leading the standings is coached by a former goaltender. The team that you coach, that's top six bound as of right now, former goaltender. The current runner-up for the championship in the league is coached by a former goaltender. And the only kind of outlier is a Stanley Cup winning goaltender who's coaching last place, Asiago. Is that just a coincidence that we got almost 30% of the head coaching positions in this league filled by former goaltenders, or is there more to it?
I didn't know that was a situation, but that's pretty incredible, to be honest. I'm amazed. No, I don't have an answer for that one. I think it's great. I love to have former goalies get in as coaches. I know you have to be engaged for 60 minutes on the ice, so it's an easier transition, I find. And you see everything from your net when you're playing. So you get the same as being on the bench. You have to be engaged the whole game. But no, I think that's pretty wild. I didn't know that.
There you go. Glad I was able to shed a little light on the great goaltenders that we have on the benches. But what I'm kind of wondering is, how does perspective change for a head coach when having played as a goaltender? Is there a different style of coaching for a former goaltender, or does that even out over the course of a coaching career?
I think everyone's in their own. Everyone's different, right? Every goalie's a bit different. Different mindsets and different ways to get engaged for different situations. But I always spend a lot of time too in my career sitting on the bench, listening to different coaches run benches, and learning and taking from them what you can, and also seeing how teams prepare against you and how they try to attack and how they play a power play or how you do PK. And you take a lot because you see it from every team when you're playing as well. So I find through my experience, trying to take what you can from everybody, good or bad, and use it yourself and learn from it.
As we're rounding out this conversation, I know you're incredibly busy and there's this huge game against Klagenfurt tomorrow. Just a couple things to round out the conversation. Our good friends over at Unibet, they're keeping track of so many different statistics, and they've got a quote-unquote consistency tracker, an advanced metric that kind of illustrates how consistent a team's been. You're right in the middle are that at 50%. And I know seeking consistency is like the holy grail, not being as volatile as the Innsbruck season at times has maybe been. How do you personally try to seek and find consistency in your teams or in your team's game?
Oh, that's a great question. Consistency is everything for success day in and day out. So we try and have good competition in every practice. To start practice, we have a game and the loser has to clean up the pucks after practice just to keep the intensity up right away and get guys going right away. We tried to do that a little bit more to find that consistency, and we found it helped. But also being off the ice, seeing guys get up in the gym and putting that work in every day. And it's a process for sure, but you got to trust your guys to put that work in. And you have to push them a little farther too to keep that consistency. And I think once we notice that it gives us success, it's been helping us this year for sure. And we have the right guys and the right characters in the leadership group that are pushing that. And that is a huge help to have that leadership group push that for you. And we have a lot of great leaders in that room, come from different experiences and successful careers so far. So it's been a huge help to push that consistency.
Two things that I want to talk about, and then I'll leave you be. One question from a listener that got to me, a fairly interesting one, and I don't know if there is an answer, but I'd love to ask you the question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
That's a good question. I try and think of that myself at times, but I, with a young family, I always consider that as well, where we want to be as a family. And my career-wise, I want to be at the highest level I can get to. I always want to better myself, just like as a player. Coach is the same. He wants to reach the top, go as far as he can, and be as successful as possible. So wherever I can go up, that's what I'm shooting for.
Now, once this conversation sees the light of day, the game in Klagenfurt will have already been played, but recent history suggests that you've always been playing Klagenfurt tough. And when looking at the Unibet stats, 5 of the last 10 games in Klagenfurt, you were able to win, which is a really, really good result, obviously, when taking into account how tough a place Klagenfurt is to win. Why? Is it just a feel, or is it indeed the case that they seem to have a knack for Klagenfurt?
Well, I think the guys prepare mentally for that rink. They know it's a war zone. It's not an easy night. It's an extremely competitive place to play, and they are a very good team, and they are a hard team to play against. So I think the players look in themselves and rise to the challenge, and I got to tip my hat to them because they put that work in and they go for it. But yeah, that team is solid over there. A lot of skill, a lot of speed, a lot of depth. And the message we're trying to get ready for tomorrow is we need to bring that intensity for 60 minutes like we tried to against Bolzano. It'll be a similar type game. I'm expecting physical speed and an intense one for sure.
Obviously, by Wednesday, we'll know how the game in Klagenfurt is gone. One thing to remind all the people out there, and I have to back this up, I'm not the schedule maker for Pulse, and I'm incredibly happy about this, but we haven't had the pleasure of having a game with Innsbruck on our Pulse 24 match day, but that's about to change in mid-December. We're going to have you play in Salzburg, and I think on the second Christmas holiday, indeed, we get a Christmas game with you in Villa. So you're playing your way onto national television, really looking forward to having Innsbruck there. So those are two dates that listeners and Innsbruck fans can already jot down. Thank you so much, Coach, for jumping onto the show. Thank you so much for giving incredible insights into everything that's gone on with Innsbruck. Wishing you all the best for the rest of the season and looking forward to having you on the podcast again.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was great. And all the best to you too. Appreciate it. Winnipeg Hockey O'Clock.
Ursprünglich wäre das eine Episode gewesen, in der nur ein einziger Gast auch hier hätte Rede und Antwort stehen müssen. Jetzt sind es tatsächlich zwei und über den zweiten Gast freue ich mich fast noch ein klein wenig mehr als über den ersten. Mit Mitch O'Keefe zu talken war schon schön, aber es gastiert jetzt natürlich niemand geringerer als die Person, die am mit Abstand meisten Minuten als Gast am Unibet Hockey O'Clock Kerbholz hat. Das ist niemand geringerer als der Erfolgstrainer, muss man tatsächlich sagen, und auch Neo-Headcoach der Steinbach Black Wings Linz. Guter Freund, guter alter Bekannter und guter Freund auch des Unibet Hockey O'Clock Podcasts. Phil Lukas, freut mich sehr, dass du ein klein wenig Zeit nehmen wirst.
Wie immer, danke für die Blumen, Martin, und ich freue mich, abermals bei dir als Gast sein zu dürfen.
Für die Unibet-Statistik ist normalerweise extrem tief. Das Einzige, was sie noch nicht ausweist, ist, wie lange du tatsächlich hier schon Rede und Antwort stehen musstest. Es gab einerseits das Phil Lukas Spezial vor einigen Jahren mittlerweile, muss man dazu sagen. Es gab viele, viele Episoden, in denen du als Puls 24 Experte auch Rede und Antwort gestanden bist. Jetzt erstmals als Head Coach, und immer wenn ich dich auf der Bank sehe und immer wenn ich das sportliche Produkt, das die Steinbach Black Wings Linz aktuell aufs Eis zaubern, sehe, bin ich verleitet dazu, an den Terminus Technicus, der dir so viel bedeutet, zu denken, nämlich Energie. Dass du jemand bist, der sehr viel dort rein, nicht rein interpretiert, aber damit verbindet und auch spürt, wann Energie durch eine Mannschaft geht. Deswegen, wie steht's aktuell um den Energiehaushalt der Linzer?
Ja, zuerst einmal möchte ich ein bisschen anfangen, wo du jetzt angeknüpft hast. Ich habe ja das Vergnügen gehabt, jahrelang zu kommentieren oder einige Jahre lang zu kommentieren, und habe dort mehr oder weniger das, was mir wichtig ist am Spiel Eishockey, hab ich die Möglichkeit gehabt, das zu vermitteln, und nichts anderes tue ich jetzt. Du hast es angesprochen, Energieintensität ist etwas, was für mich im Spiel Eishockey so um und auf ist und das Allerwichtigste ist. Um das herum, um dieses Fundament, um das sprechen wir immer, können wir dann unsere Spielweise aufbauen. Und das wird eigentlich auf täglicher Basis, sage ich einmal, kommuniziert. Nicht nur von mir, aber am allerwichtigsten ist ja, dass die Spieler das verinnerlichen und die Spieler das dann nach außen tragen. Und ich denke, in dieser ersten Phase dieses Grunddurchgangs hat die Mannschaft das sehr, sehr gut in die Aktion umsetzen können. Und da bin ich schon sehr zufrieden mit unserer Einstellung, wie wir täglich an die Sachen gehen. Und ich glaube, das ist auch der Grundstein für das, dass wir recht erfolgreich waren in dieser ersten Phase. Und wie es oftmals so ist in der Natur des Menschen, dass wenn man sich irgendwo in einem oberen Feld oder Erfolgserlebnisse feiert, gilt es dann immer wieder, sage ich einmal, die Zügel zu straffen. Und auch dabei bei der Sache zu bleiben, weil oft in der Natur des Menschen, dass man die Bequemlichkeit dann findet. Und hier gilt es einfach dort anzusetzen, dass es verständlich ist und es zu einer, zu einer Selbstverständlichkeit wird, dass ohne diesen Faktor in unserem Spiel wir einfach nicht konkurrenzfähig sein können. Und alle X's und O's dann eigentlich keinen Unterschied mehr machen, wenn wir dieses Element in unserem Spiel nicht tragen können.
Und gleichzeitig war es bisher auch dadurch, was du beschrieben hast und worauf du natürlich hoffst, dass das weiterhin der Fall sein wird, sehr, sehr erfolgreich. Und das hat sich auch in Zahlen bemessen lassen. Und die Zahl wird zum Erscheinungszeitpunkt des Unibet Hockey Clock Podcasts auch schon wieder 10 Tage alt sein. Deswegen jetzt nicht mehr ganz so relevant, aber trotzdem, als wir vor vergangenen Sonntag mit dem Puls 24 Hockey Matchday in Feldkirch das Spiel Pioneers gegen die Spurs Werner Capitals übertragen durften, sind wir in die Sendung reingegangen mit dem Faktum, dass natürlich auch der Unibet-Statistik nicht verborgen geblieben ist, dass die Black Wings seit 4 Jahren und 234 Tagen erstmals wieder Tabellenführer waren. Und ich weiß schon, Momentaufnahme Und mir ist auch klar, dass nicht alle Mannschaften gleich viele Spiele absolviert hatten und dergleichen. Aber ist das ein Fakt, der einerseits an dich herangetragen worden ist? Ist das ein Fakt, der da andererseits was bedeutet? Oder ist es tatsächlich mittlerweile so diese Headcoaching-Luft, die du dauerhaft inhalierst, wo man von Shift zu Shift oder Spiel zu Spiel denkt und die Tabelle eh wurscht ist?
Es ist jetzt wirklich kein Schwindel von meiner Seite, aber es ist wahrscheinlich das Letzte, was du jetzt angesprochen hast. Du kennst mich, ich bin kein Zahlenmensch. Ich muss mich anfreunden mit gewissen Zahlen, weil schlussendlich geben die uns auch Informationen über, wie die Dinge laufen in unserem Kollektiv, in unserer Mannschaft, an was gilt es eventuell mehr zu arbeiten und was nicht. Tatsächlich ist es aber wirklich so, dass ja, ich einen Blick geworfen habe, wo wir im Moment in der Tabelle stehen. Und es ist auch an mich herangetragen worden, dass wir an erster Stelle waren zu diesem Zeitpunkt im Grunddurchgang. Natürlich war das was Schönes. Es war leider, sage ich, nur ein kurzer Moment, an dem wir uns da oben festsetzen haben können. Mir ist auch das nicht abgegangen, entgangen, dass wir doch einige Spiele mehr haben als unsere Konkurrenten zum Teil und deswegen auch vor ihnen liegen. Also es spielen da einige Faktoren zusammen, aber nichtsdestotrotz zeigt es schon, dass wir vielleicht oder dass die Mannschaft einiges richtig gemacht hat in dieser Anfangsphase. Und an dem gilt es einfach anzuknüpfen, nicht zufrieden zu sein, sondern weiterhin an seinem Spiel, auch an unserem Spiel zu arbeiten. Und da liegt die große Aufgabe.
Du bist eingangs angesprochen, du bist eine der wenigen Personen, die viele, viele Stunden Gespräch mit mir bisweilen erdulden musste oder zumindest durchstehen musste. Und da bin ich auch sehr happy drüber, wenngleich es Fans, die das jetzt hören, vielleicht nicht ganz so froh stimmen wird, dass wir das versuchen, innerhalb der 10, vielleicht auch 15 Minuten zu halten, also wirklich auch kurz, weil deine Zeit als Head Coach nicht nur sehr wertvoll ist, sondern weil es ganz am Ende unserer Konversation auch große, schöne Nachricht, Verkündigung geben wird, weil du das vorher angesprochen hast, dass der Prozess natürlich weitergehen muss und dass man jetzt auch anknüpfen muss an dem bisher gezeigten. Auch die Unibet-Statistik spuckt ja regelmäßig mit Updates eine Meisterquote aus und da hat sich Linz mittlerweile in den, dort heißt es so schön, erweiterten Favoritenkreis geschlichen. Die Meisterquote von Linz ist aktuell eine 1:14 und ich will da nichts jinxen und nichts vorwegnehmen, aber Linz war vorher deutlich schlechter situiert. Jetzt auf einmal, würde ich zumindest mal so formulieren, in der oberen Hälfte, was den Favoritenkreis anbelangt, merkt man da auch bei dir, dass es schon ein Durchlaufen der Rollen ist, dass man am Anfang vielleicht als Außenseiter startet und nun auf einmal im Kreis der Favoriten, wie es die Unibet-Statistik aussagt, der erweiterten Favoriten angekommen ist?
Absolutes Nein, Martin. Ich muss dich enttäuschen. Aber natürlich, dadurch, dass ich so viele Minuten schon gesprochen habe im Unibet-Podcast, dann werde ich mich auch hier nicht kurz fassen, weil eins ist klar und das ist das Nächste, was uns als Organisation und unsere Mannschaft auch bewusst sein muss. Es sind in dieser Liga gibt es keine einfachen Spiele. Und das haben wir in dieser Anfangsphase auch schon lernen müssen. Es reichen 5% weniger, die wir abrufen können, 5% weniger in unseren physischen Möglichkeiten, wenn wir die nicht abrufen können, oder 10% weniger in unserem Fokus. Und schon können wir als Verlierer vom Eis gehen. Auf der anderen Seite, wenn wir hundertprozentig bereit sind und fokussiert sind und bereit sind, physisch auch den Aufwand zu betreiben, mit der Energie und Intensität zu spielen, die wir immer wieder ansprechen, und auch mit dem Fokus hundertprozentig bei der Sache sind, dass wir die Dinge in allen drei Zonen umsetzen wollen, wie wir sie umsetzen wollen, wie wir es geplant haben oder wie wir es trainiert haben und besprochen haben, mit und ohne Scheibe, dann haben wir Möglichkeit, gegen jeden zu gewinnen. Das ist das ist der Mindset, den wir haben müssen. Und den gilt es einfach wieder, immer wieder in Erinnerung zu rufen, bei unseren Spielern, individuell, aber auch als Kollektiv. Und ich glaube, diese Erfahrungen macht eine Mannschaft immer wieder durch den Fortlauf einer Meisterschaft. Und wenn es in Vergessenheit gerät, dann müssen wir hier sein und das immer wieder ansprechen und dann auch wieder Schwerpunkte legen. woran scheitert es jetzt im Moment? Was brauchen wir in unserer Entwicklungsphase? Welches Thema oder welches Objective, welche Phase in unserem Spiel oder welches Kriterium in unserem Spiel müssen wir im Moment verbessern? Und da gilt es für uns als Coaches, eine Meinung zu haben und die umzusetzen und der Mannschaft bestmöglich weiterzuhelfen auf dem Weg. Aber alles in allem, der Favoritenkreis hin oder her, es interessiert mich überhaupt nicht. Mich interessiert jetzt wirklich nur, schaffen wir das Tag ein, Tag aus, dass wir diesen hundertprozentigen Fokus und die hundertprozentige Bereitschaft physisch bringen, weil dann stehen unsere Chancen ganz gut, dass wir eine konkurrenzfähige Mannschaft in dieser Liga sein können.
Gerade was das kurz- und mittelfristige anbelangt, hast du natürlich einen großen Erfahrungsschatz als Aktiver, aber auch als Trainer, wenngleich das Trainerdasein bei dir bisher auf die natürlich Steinbach Steelwings Linz einerseits konzentriert war, in der vergangenen Saison noch in der Alps Hockey League, auch was das Assistant Coaching beim U20-Nationalteam, auch im Herren-Nationalteam anbelangt hat, aber es ist das erste Mal als Head Coach in einem Eishockey League Team. Was sind die großen Unterschiede, wenn man Head Coach von den Steelwings ist und dann auf einmal Head Coach von den Blackwings?
Ich glaube, die Intensität des ganzen Prozesses, beziehungsweise auch die Möglichkeiten, mein Staff ist ein etwas größerer, auch wenn er nicht zu riesig ist, sage ich einmal, aber natürlich ist hier vom Eis weg schon sehr, sehr, sehr viel Aufwand, der hier zu betreiben ist, und wir möchten natürlich keine Möglichkeit auslassen, um hier der Mannschaft das zu geben, was die Mannschaft auch braucht, um sich weiterentwickeln zu können, um sich verbessern zu können. Und hier gilt es natürlich auch mit dem Prozess zu wachsen. Für mich ist es der Anfang einer Reise, möchte ich einmal sagen. Für mich ist jeder Tag irgendwo ein Lernprozess. Aber die Riesenunterschiede sehe ich jetzt so nicht. Es gilt für mich genauso, Prinzipien zu haben, die für unsere Spielweise einfach gegeben sind. Von denen bin ich so überzeugt, und die gilt es für mich so deutlich wie möglich und klar wie möglich zu vermitteln an den individuellen Athleten, beziehungsweise auch an das Kollektiv in Form von Videoanalysen, aber in Form von auch von individuellen Meetings. Und schlussendlich gilt es dann, Beziehungen irgendwo aufzubauen mit Athleten und hier irgendwo den Weg zu finden. Ja, man ist Ansprechperson, man hat Verständnis, aber auf der anderen Seite ist es auch das, es ist irgendwo eine Beziehung zwischen, ich sage nicht einem Arbeitgeber, sondern einem vielleicht Vorgesetzten und einem Mitarbeiter, aber auf einer respektvollen und gesunden Ebene. Und ich glaube, diesen Austausch, das ist das, ich sage es immer wieder, was oftmals ein bisschen zu kurz kommt für meinen Geschmack, aber wir versuchen hier tatsächlich nicht nur das Kollektiv zu coachen, sondern auch den individuellen Athleten. Und das ist wahrscheinlich das Spannendste an der ganzen Reise.
Was auch spannend ist, ist, dass ich bei dir schon wieder in diesen Flow gerutscht bin. Ich könnte stundenlang zuhören. Es wird aber tatsächlich eine der letzten längeren Ausführungen bleiben, weil einerseits deine Zeit wertvoll ist, weil wir andererseits das auch ein wenig limitieren müssen, möchte ich schon fast sagen, um zum großen News-Teil, auch zur großen Verkündung zu kommen. Es wird nämlich tatsächlich, und die Feinspitze zu Hause haben das vielleicht auch schon erkannt, eine 100. Folge von Unibet Hockey Clock geben, und die soll tatsächlich auch live aufgenommen werden. Und in der Vorbereitung darauf durfte ich mir gemeinsam auch mit den Steinbach Blackwings Linz Gedanken machen, wie wir das dann vielleicht umsetzen könnten, einfach weil der Eishockey-Standort Linz auch durchaus wieder viel, viel positive Energie erfährt. Da sind wir wieder am Anfang des Gesprächs, und deswegen findet die Aufzeichnung der 100. Folge von Unibet Hockey Clock, dem Podcast, wo du so sehr im Mittelpunkt auch stehen konntest, nicht nur in Linz statt, sondern auch mit deiner Wenigkeit, konnte natürlich auch noch jemand anderen, der sehr, sehr häufig gastieren konnte, für die Aufzeichnung in Linz mobilisieren. Das ist niemand geringerer als Greg Holtz. Das Ganze wird am 26. November 2022, das ist ein Samstag, stattfinden in der Linz AG Eisarena im VIP-Raum. Und das Ganze ist auch streng limitiert, was die Karten anbelangt. Bitte via Voranmeldung an unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. Bitte gerne sagen, wie viele Menschen man dorthin mitbringen möchte. unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com ist die offizielle Anlaufstelle. Ich hoffe, du hast noch ein klein wenig Zeit und Lust, dann auch am 26. November mit mir über Eishockey zu plaudern. Es wird ein hoffentlich cooler Abend werden. Es wird da hoffentlich prall gefüllte VIP-Bereich sein. Greg Holzer, meine Wenigkeit, wir sind auch schon beim Heimspiel gegen Ljubljana am Tag vorher, wenn ich jetzt nicht ganz falsch gewickelt bin, in der Halle, um dir ganz besonders auf die Finger zu blicken. Aber 26. und dann auch in der heimischen Arena. Geht der Chor für dich?
Also ich fühle mich ein bisschen geehrt und bedanke mich natürlich für die Einladung und freue mich natürlich auch, dich am 26. wieder mal seit langem zu sehen, und freue mich auch auf Holsti und natürlich auf alle anderen Gäste, die gern dabei sein möchten. Es ist immer ein Vergnügen, mit dir über Eishockey zu sprechen, und ich freue mich auf den 26.
Kann ich nur so zurückgeben, das Wichtigste noch dazu, es wird noch einen veritablen Überraschungsgast geben, auch mit Linzer Wurzeln. So oder so wird der Abend am 26. um 18 Uhr beginnen, ab 18.30 Uhr die Aufzeichnungen. Das Ganze wird in drei Tranchen, Vulgo Drittel, stattfinden. Dazwischen immer wieder Pausen für vielleicht die eine oder andere Konsumation eines Kaltgetränkes, je nachdem, was einem dann eben vorschwebt. Linz am 26. die 100. Folge von Unibet Hockey Clock. Freue mich extrem darauf und vor allem darüber, dass Phil Lukas dort gastieren wird. Und dann plaudern wir auf jeden Fall deutlich länger als jetzt die 16,5 Minuten. Möchte mich sehr bedanken, dass du dir so ausführlich Zeit genommen hast. Am 26. dann mindestens doppelt so lang.
Ich freue mich, Martin. Unibet Hockey
Clock. Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey Clock.